Welcome to the Kickstart Garage, where we want to inspire and educate the leaders of tomorrow. Join us as we learn from the best in the business.
Welcome back to the Kickstart Garage. I'm your host, Sam John Byrne, and on today's show, I'm going to cover the key takeaways from The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. It's a fantastic book on behavioral finance, and honestly, it's such an easy read, even to the non-finance folk. So the book comprises of 19 short stories and everything is straight to the point, and the book teaches you how to make better sense of your relationship towards money. And Morgan does a great job at demonstrating that, you know, we're complex creatures and we all have different relationships with money. For example, some of you listening might be familiar with Theodore Orr Johnson. And his story was highlighted in the book Unshakable by Tony Robbins, but I feel The Psychology of Money is almost a testament to his story. So for those of you who haven't heard, Theodore Orr Johnson was a UPS driver who never earned more than $14,000 per year. But when he retired, he had $70 million, all thanks to, you know, rigid saving and wise investing. There was nothing complex to it or how he got there. It was just two simple habits. So, you know, this book is all about, you know, doing well with money isn't necessarily about what you know. It's about how you behave. Financial success is not a hard science. It's a soft skill where how you behave is more important than what you know. But before we get into the five key takeaways from the book, I thought I'd give you a bit of a rundown on Morgan Housel. Morgan is a partner at the Collaborative Fund and a former columnist at The Motley Fool and The Wall Street Journal. He is a two-time winner of the Best in Business Award from the Society of American Business Editors and Writers, winner of the New York Times Sydney Award, and two-time finalist for the Gerald Loeb Award for Distinguished Business and Financial Journalism. So he's also pretty active on Twitter. So if you want to keep up to date with his stuff, I'd follow him over there. Anyway, let's get into the takeaway. So number one, no one is crazy. This is the first chapter of the book and it opened with a bang. Everyone has different experiences with money and it's important to understand that. In doing so, you might feel better about what you do with yours and less judgmental about what other people do with theirs. You know, each to their own, as they would say. And in the book, Morgan uses lottery tickets as a way of demonstrating this understanding. So typically, he analyzes it from the perspective in the US and backs it up with a bit of data. So typically, mostly poor people in the US buy lottery tickets. Collectively, they spend a fortune on them. And the lowest income household in the US spend around $412 per year on lottery tickets. At the same time, 40% of Americans cannot come up with $400 in an emergency, completely blowing their safety net on a near impossible bet. Now, this might seem crazy to you and irrational, but think about the people buying those tickets. So most of them are living paycheck to paycheck, not being able to afford very much. Buying that lottery ticket for them might seem like the only tangible dream they have of making it big, even if the odds are stacked against them. From their perspective, it might not seem that crazy if they believe there's a bit of hope of winning. It's easy to be judgmental about what they do with their money when we're living completely different lives to them. So, you know, it's our experiences shape our relationship that we have with money, and we all go through different experiences throughout life. As a result, we will all have a different relationship towards money and how we behave with it. We're all playing a different game with different goals, ambitions, time horizons, obligations, freedoms, opportunities. So, you know, stay your lane and focus on your game. Understanding that no one is crazy will make you more cautious about who's telling you to do what with your money or seeing what other people are doing with theirs. No one understands your position better than you, so do what works for you. Second key takeaway, never enough. It's in our nature to want more, even more so with the capitalistic system that we live in. It's great for creating envy. When we see something we like but don't have, we instantly want it. We look towards successful and famous people and envy the life they have. Personally speaking, I had this mentality with the early iPhones. I'd buy a new phone nearly every year, but after about 2 weeks after purchasing it, I'd already want the next best one. And it's only until I stumbled upon a TED talk by the minimalists that changed my mindset on how I look at the value of things. And I'd highly recommend you check it out as well. But you need to understand when enough is enough. this might sound conservative, and it's probably flying in the face of the philosophies of the likes of Grant Cardone or any motivational phony or guru trying to sell you a course that philosophy they might be preaching. But enough does not mean too little. The only way you'll know the only way you'll know you've had enough food is eating until you're sick, right? Nobody really does this because they hate that feeling. For some reason, that same logic doesn't translate to business, investing, personal advice, the things we buy, and, you know, so on. Most people are unhappy or unsatisfied because they focus on the things that they don't have. And social comparison is partly to blame for this, but just as much as your own mindset. There will always be someone that has more than you, and that's okay. There's going to be someone that has more than them. And you don't want to get caught on that hamster wheel of chasing someone else's desires. It's an endless road. So appreciate and value what you have. And when you think you want something more, ask yourself why. And there was a great clip, actually an episode even, with Dan Bilzerian on Joe Rogan. Now, I know what you're thinking, Dan Bilzerian. But trust me, the clip itself is actually good. If I could find it, I'll link it in the description below. But he talks about how having more money or a higher net worth or higher standard of living, whatever, could change your base level of happiness, which is, you know, it's true. But eventually you'll hit a ceiling where all your needs and wants are basically met, you know, right? And at that point, you know, you've reached the highest, your pinnacle point of happiness. But any deterioration from that level, you'll suddenly feel dissatisfaction because you won't be able to live the luxurious lifestyle or, you know, the standard lifestyle that you once had. So even if the setback is minimal, you know, it will just bring you down a notch. So your happiness is all based on perspective, which is based on experience. So you need to understand what's enough for you. Anyway, third point, save money. Without a doubt, probably the most important principle. I've said it on the podcast that most personal finance books can simply be boiled down to spend less than you earn and invest the difference intelligently. Spending is the one thing that's in your control. How much you earn, whether you're employed, self-employed, or an investor, is pretty much out of your control. Saving is a simple but powerful habit. It doesn't need to be complex, but I think people are drawn towards complexity and nuance. But that doesn't help you. In fact, building wealth has little to do with how much you earn or your investment returns, but lots to do with your savings rate, considering wealth is all about how much you keep. I know Morgan has mentioned this on other podcasts that people, that most people say they want to be millionaires are really saying they just want to spend €1 million or dollars. And nobody ever dreams of, you know, keeping $1 million, but they dream of spending $1 million, you know, but if you spend it, you're not a millionaire. But that's what wealth is. It's about how much you keep. And, you know, saving is an underrated and underappreciated habit. And my girlfriend goes nuts at me because I don't have a savings plan. And I tell her I don't need one. When you save 50 to 70% of my income, when I save 50 to 70% of my income, I don't need a savings plan. And I'm not saving for anything in particular, but I know if I want to save for something, I don't need to change that habit. You know, therefore, I don't need a plan. And you don't need a specific reason to save, but having one might motivate you, and that's okay too. But you should just save for the sake of saving. As Warren Buffett would say, do not save what is left after spending. Instead, spend what is left after saving. Your plans come together as a byproduct of good habits, I find. And it's one of the reasons I've stopped planning. You know, and just jump back to saving. But having that nest egg gives you, you know, the flexibility and funds to pounce on opportunities. It offers you protection when unforeseen events happen, which you can't account for. The more you save, the more you're protected from the unknown. And I understand that a lot of people have contractual commitments they might be able to mitigate, that they might not be able to mitigate. But for anything that's flexible in your expense structure, start by eliminating or reducing them. And obviously keep the things that bring value to your life. You know, don't just get rid of something and then suddenly it makes you unhappy. You know, if it's making you happy, why get rid of it? But just question that value proposition with your expenses. You know, you don't need to go cold turkey, but, you know, maximize it as much as you can. Anyway, key takeaway number four is called Man in the Car Paradox. And this is actually the name of the chapter of the book. And I really enjoyed this chapter of the book because I've had a similar thought. So it was funny hearing someone else mention it. And the whole idea behind this principle is that no one is impressed with your possessions as much as you are. And Morgan demonstrates this through what he calls the man in the car paradox. So let me pose it to you. Have you ever seen a really nice car and thought, I'd love that car. I'd look really cool in it. Well, guess what? Nobody gives a shit. When you see someone driving a car, you rarely think, well, that person driving the car is really cool. Unless, of course, that person is Robert Downey Jr. Instead, you visualize how you would look in that car. And people long for these luxurious items because of what they represent and how they've been marketed to them and how they think they appear to other people. It's the sense of admiration and respect, and other people may genuinely just like the product, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's all about your intent and your value and how you perceive your own value propositions. If respect and admiration are the goal, be careful how you seek it. Humility, kindness, empathy will earn you more respect and admiration than stuff ever will. Also, spending money to demonstrate to people how much money you have is the fastest way to have less money. So really question your next big ticket purchase. Finally, the last takeaway, margin for error. This chapter is all about, you know, accounting for margin of error, the uncertainty. This is also a key principle in value investing. It's all about having that room for what could go wrong and not losing everything. It's about dealing with uncertainty of the future or a particular outcome. And Housel mentions that the most important part of every plan is the plan. Sorry, the most important part of every plan is planning on your plan not going according to plan. Sorry, a bit of a tongue twister. But you can see why I gave up on planning and just adopt good habits. The future is filled with uncertainty and it's impossible to account for an unexpected event. And I'm sure most of you now know what COVID, like even when I'm reading annual reports, there's risk disclosures in there now for pandemics that were never in there before. So even the pros can't account for these unexpected risks, you know. You just have to take them as they come and you just have to be prepared. But to Housel, you know, I save a lot and I have no idea what I'll use my savings for in the future. When buying a company, I take a similar approach and accounting for margin error. I want to purchase that company below what I believe its true intrinsic value is. That way, if anything happens that I didn't account for, I won't lose much money. And having that buffer will prepare you for the uncertainty of the future so you don't get wiped out. It's hard to quantify, but it's such an unknown variable. That's why I try to save as much as possible. It's better to pray for the best and prepare for the worst. Eliminating the downside, again, is something that's somewhat in your control, but the upside will always take care of itself, and that's something that's always out of control. Anyway, so we come to the end, and you know, I know this was short and it was sweet, but that's literally what this book is. So I wanted this key takeaway to be something similar, and I hope you enjoyed it. It's a fantastic book. There's still so much in that I haven't covered here, and I definitely recommend picking it up. As I said, it's an easy read and you'll absolutely fly through it. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check us out on social media. If you want to be notified when the latest episode goes live, be sure to subscribe to the newsletter. We'll leave a link in the description of this podcast. And that's it for now, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks for listening to the Kickstart Garage. This show is for entertainment purposes only.
No one on the show has provided investment advice. The information provided by the Kickstart Garage podcast should not be construed as investment advice. The opinions and views expressed on the Kickstart Garage podcast or those of the participants do not reflect those of the host or sponsors. The Kickstart Garage, its producers, sponsors, hosts, and guests shall not be liable for losses resulting from the investment decisions based upon the opinions or viewpoints presented on the Kickstart Garage.